Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence. I'm here with Kristen Bonney, and we're going to talk about initiation. Kristen was initiated some 24 years ago, something like that, in Wales, and has had many experiences in our Reiki community. So I'm really happy to welcome Kristen to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, Kristen, initiation is one of the more mysterious elements, I think, and also one that has the most questions sometimes because people are wanting to delve into the mystery. That's my feeling. But let's first find out how you came to Reiki, and what were the initiations like for you at the time when you were initiated some years ago?
Well, I first came to Reiki in 1985 when my master, Marta Getty, turned up rather unexpectedly in Wales and said she was a Reiki master. And I had seen a little demonstration of Reiki in London at that stage and had thought it looked rather boring. Because
totally looks boring. I mean, I can't imagine somebody watching a Reiki treatment.
There were two men up on a stage, one had his hands on the other, and I saw nothing. And any time anybody asked interesting questions, my mind perked up, and they said, "Oh, we can't answer that now because you have to pay all this money and do these initiations." And I thought it sounded rather weird. But when Marta arrived, I think it was the first day she came, she just saw that I was tired and she put me down on my sitting room floor and gave me a treatment. And that was it. I was hooked from the first minute. And I think what really awakened my interest was the fact that I could do it for myself, mm-hmm. on myself. Mm-hmm. I'd been involved in other therapies, and I was running a little therapy centre myself at the time. And if I needed help, I needed to go to somebody else.
Uh-huh.
So the discovery of something so beautiful and simple that I could use every day on myself was just a revelation to me. It was wonderful.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Oh, great. So then what happened? You decided to be initiated in first degree?
Yes, I couldn't wait, of course. So she was doing a first degree in Stratford a couple of weekends later, so I just trailed her down and went for it.
And what was that like to be initiated?
I still remember the feeling of it. It was very... There was a feeling of welcome in the room, sort of a feeling of coming home, I would say. There were 10 of us in the group, I remember, and we sat in a long line, and I could hear things going on. And when it came to my turn, I just felt the hands touching me, and there was a sort of noise like blowing, and gentle music playing, candlelight, very nice atmosphere, very peaceful. But still at the end of it, I didn't really think anything would change in myself. I just thought, well, that was a nice half hour. And then after the first day, Marta went off and she said, "Oh, well, just go and practice on somebody." And I was a little nervous because we hadn't really learnt any hand positions, and I didn't know what to do. So I said, "Well, how do I know where to put my hands?" She said, "Oh, your hands will tell you." And so there were three women, I remember, and we borrowed somebody's husband, and we spread him out on the floor, and we started practicing on him. And I got the legs, and I remember just putting my hands on, like my teacher had said. And when I got to his knee, I felt something. My hands became hot, and there was a sort of feeling of just wanting to stay there, wanting to stay in that one position. I thought maybe this is what she meant. Your hands will tell you.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked the man, is there any problem with your knee? And he said, oh yes, I had a kneecap cleaned out or something a couple of months ago, and it hasn't healed properly.
Wow.
And that was my first confirmation that something had changed. Very exciting.
Very exciting.
Yeah.
So then you went through the rest of the initiations?
Yes, it was a full weekend, and we practiced, and I got backache because we didn't have any Reiki tables at that stage. We were all on the floor. It was pretty uncomfortable, but I continued to feel increasing energy in the hands, and it seemed to just turn on pretty quickly, which surprised me, because I'd always thought of myself as a very rather earthy sort of person, and not very sensitive.
But you came to Reiki somehow for your back, is that true?
I came to be interested in complementary medicine because I had back trouble, yes.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So I started with massage, and then it got into osteopathy, and then I became connected with a group of people who were learning about all kinds of things, finished up at the Festival of Mind, Body and Spirit in London, and eventually came into some family money and bought a property and started a little centre of my own.
Wonderful. So you then started to organise for Marta, or?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. And she kept coming back, and there were always people waiting, and that went on for about 3 years, and it was wonderful. All the therapists in the centre learned Reiki. And we'd sit around the kitchen table discussing the relative merits of osteopathy versus acupuncture versus herbal medicine and so on. But we all agreed that Reiki was what we needed for ourselves.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. So then what happened?
About 4 months after doing first degree, I couldn't wait, and I did second degree. And that was a very different experience. Mm-hmm. The initiation felt very, very strong. But by that stage, Marta had warned us that Reiki will shake your tree, that things will be changing in your life.
Uh-huh.
And that had certainly happened to me. So by the time I came to second degree, I was in some major emotional process. And the fact that the second degree class was in Glastonbury didn't help, because that's an extremely intense place, in which I've never much liked, I have to say. And then I started treating people at a distance.
Uh-huh.
And that was interesting, because my previous therapy, my main therapy, had been in radionics, which is a distant form of treatment.
Oh, right, right.
So in addition to my, their twice weekly dose of radionics, I gave them a distant Reiki treatment. And sometimes I found I didn't really need to do the bit with the radionics. The distant Reiki was enough, and it seemed an awful lot more simple.
Uh-huh.
So eventually it became, it replaced the radionics, uh-huh, and the other things faded away.
Uh-huh. Do you have any stories you'd like to share with the listeners about in those days in sending distant treatments?
I remember being very impressed and a little scared of the way Marta handled somebody that I was trying to help. So I think she'd taken first degree with Marta, and she kept telephoning and saying, I'm treating myself every day and it doesn't seem to work. And, you know, she was sort of whining about nothing happening. And I was trying to be terribly nice and gentle and encouraging her and things. And Marta got on the phone to her eventually. I said, I can't handle this woman. And I just heard Marta listening for a bit and then saying, excuse me, how much do you want to heal? And I thought, oh, wow, that's direct. But it changed the woman's attitude just like that. It was amazing. She needed a much more direct approach.
Uh-huh.
And so, uh-huh, that was one of the things I learned during the whole time working with Martin, that I'd been pussyfooting around a bit, and she was much more American and direct. That was good for me.
That's great. Yeah. So how did you get to be a Reiki master?
Well, I've been just toddling along, very happy with my practice. I was treating quite a few people at my center by that stage, and organizing classes. And there is always a queue of people waiting to do a class. Marta would come back. She'd stay over winter for a couple of months, uh-huh. A lot of teaching. Uh-huh. And then I had a group, I remember, of about 16 people waiting.
Wow.
And she said she was going to move to Italy. And I just looked at her. I said, well, what do we do now? She said, I can't come back this often. And she just looked at me. And I thought, what? Me? And I thought, well, why not? And I asked her to train me as a master.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that was another quite long process, a year and a half or something, 2 years. And I realized that all the time I'd been organizing classes, I had sort of been in training already, really.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So then you were initiated as a master?
Yes, eventually. I found that things changed in the classes I was organising when I realised that I was going to eventually be in the hot seat. You know, I was watching her,
uh-huh.
And thinking, well, I wonder if I could answer that question. They were asking, it seemed to me, impossibly difficult questions, and I was very impressed with the way she could always find her way around it and find a way of addressing whatever was going on with the person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually she felt it was time to be initiated. She said, where would you like to be initiated? I said, well, there's a very favourite little stone circle of mine on the top of a mountain. So she was game. It was February. And we took a little stool, climbed the mountain. Luckily it was a nice, clear, cool day. And sat in the middle of the stone circle and she initiated me.
Beautiful.
Very special. Yeah. And I remember I had a great, I had a little bag with me with a big fat envelope with $10,000 in it. And it felt wonderful just to hand it over to her on the top of that mountain top.
Yeah. What did that represent to you?
Gratitude, exchange. Incredible value.
Uh-huh.
I don't think I even realised at that time what I was getting, but there was a feeling that wrapped up in that package. There was a lot of mystery because I knew I was entering into a different phase in my life and in my Reiki,
uh-huh.
And that certainly turned out to be true. Everything changed. I then meditated and asked inside, well, when should I start teaching? Because I didn't really feel ready to start teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And the voice in my head said, after your birthday. That's at the end of November, so I had to wait for almost a year. And I thought, I wonder why. But I soon realised.
Why was that?
A lot in my life had to change. The first thing that happened was that I sold my centre.
Wow.
And then I decided I'd like to meet some other Reiki masters. I hadn't really met anybody apart from Marta. Maybe a couple of others in Britain, but she talked a lot about the international community and conferences and the Reiki Alliance and Phyllis. And I wanted to meet everybody. So, to my husband's amazement, I announced that I was going to Hawaii. Which is where the conference was going to be that year. And so off I went on this long trip and met all these weird people from all over the world. It was an astonishing experience. I was a little disappointed to find that you weren't there.
Uh-huh.
Didn't go to that one. But
no.
Met some amazing people, and people have been friends ever since. Yeah.
Wonderful. Uh-huh. So after all these years and all these initiations that you've done now, I'm wondering, what would you like to say about initiation? And let's just start with that, just kind of some general feeling.
Well, I think I was a linguist before I did anything else, and I always go for the word.
Yes.
And the word had a lot of resonance for me.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, of course, it means a beginning. But I'd done a lot of reading in my early life in spiritual practices and so on, and I'd always been fascinated with initiation in ancient Egypt, ancient
uh-huh.
Greece, and in different cultures. And as quite a young girl, I think, had fantasized about what it must have been like to go into those pyramids or into those Eleusinian mysteries in ancient Greece and to become a sort of a priestess. So the word initiation had quite a mysterious connotation for
mm-hmm.
me.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from being a beginning, it was certainly a beginning of many, many things. So the mystery element was there from the beginning and is still there. Each time I go into the initiation room, there's this wonderful sense of a beginning, a new mystery. The same yet different.
Mm-hmm.
And an incredible feeling of privilege and humility, of just being in the presence of this unknown something where I touch into a different dimension.
Mm-hmm.
And the other side of it is watching the student who's
mm-hmm.
being initiated. That just through this 4-day process, such changes can take place. The astonishment on their faces when they realize something really is happening in their hands, or that old feelings come up. And it seems so simple, and so extraordinary,
mm-hmm.
so mysterious.
Do you feel that the initiation process down through the ages, say from ancient Egypt or ancient Greece, do they have any kind of similarity or connection with the initiation as we know it? And I don't know if I'm talking about the actual ritual of initiation, but the use of initiation,
yeah,
or
the purpose,
or the
yes.
yeah, or the
yes.
purpose of initiation.
Yeah. I'm absolutely sure there's a relationship. Yes, because in the ancient practices, there was a priest, and then there was the neophyte or the student
mm-hmm.
who worked through different stages, and the initiation was simply the marker of them going into a different stage.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a doorway. And I believe at Newgrange in Ireland, you know, there was, some people think it was an initiatory temple. And on the stones on the wall, there are symbols. There's the triple spiral of the goddess, and so
huh.
on. And a psychic I've spoken to who has worked with these ancient monuments say those symbols were markers of the student going into a different chamber, which represented a different level of experience.
Uh-huh.
And if you hadn't done the work to go into the next stage, it was completely forbidden to you. It was only the people who'd been initiated who could go into the central chamber.
Uh-huh.
And of course, it's a much more inward process in Reiki, but I believe that's also the case, that, you know, the preparation is the practice.
Mm-hmm.
The preparation
mm-hmm.
in each stage is
mm-hmm.
the practice, which is why I sometimes regret for myself that I didn't wait longer between each stage,
mm-hmm.
that I'd actually had more time to practice. But
mm-hmm.
that's how it was for me. But mm-hmm. I have great respect for students now who wait and wait. And I had one student who came after 25 years. She said she'd done first degree 25 years ago in Australia. And she turned up at a second degree class of mine saying, I think I'm ready to do second degree. I've been practicing. And
wow.
she came into the class and she said, this is exactly the same feeling I had when I did my first degree 25 years ago. Isn't that amazing?
Wonderful.
Yeah. Different teacher, different country, different era, but the feeling was the same.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So she'd prepared herself, she'd waited.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, people are, lots of people say that we're in a time when, like in this period of time, that time is moving faster and that we need to do things without waiting and so on. And I feel a little bit like an old fogey because I'm always talking about preparation and trying to get people to see, anyway, in my opinion, that there's nothing that takes the place of time. It's very interesting because we try to squash time, like we our relationships run full bore. I can't imagine what a relationship would have been like had I lived in the, well, now I live in the western part of the United States. So imagine that there's like, your nearest neighbor is like 20 miles away or something. Mm-hmm. And the nearest town is, you know, a half a day ride. And you're out there in the middle of nowhere and you have to like wait for some guy to kind of float through, and maybe they're single
yes.
or maybe they're not, and maybe
yes.
you are connected and maybe you're not.
Yeah.
And somehow you get involved and you, it's like you get the choice of two or three men in your whole life to be connected
yes.
with. And now it's like people are on the internet surfing, you know, through thousands of people
yes.
to find a mate.
Yes.
I mean, it's
yeah.
a very strange situation,
yes.
I feel.
Yeah.
But at the same time, when I am accompanying students, I just see that preparation is so important and that time is really a vital part of that preparation.
Yes, yes. I totally agree, yes. And of course in the ancient initiation practices, it would have taken years and years to prepare yourself for the next level. Most people wouldn't have got to the inner sanctum, if you like,
uh-huh.
you know, that would have been very unusual. Most people would have been in the outer circle of some kind.
Uh-huh.
They'd have to wait many lifetimes before they could take another step.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So if this is, if our practice is somewhat connected to that, then do you see an analogy or something or a message in the way that people are being initiated now and with relatively little time? Of preparation?
I suppose... I'm sure there's a relationship, and I'm sure the time is moving faster, and I'm sure in a way it's okay that we're taking things faster. I mean, who knows how long we're going to be here. The fact that Reiki has surfaced or resurfaced at this time in our history and is available to so many people because of the communications and so on, I feel it's meant.
Uh-huh.
So I'm not regretting, you know, the timescale of ancient Egypt or anything. But I think there's a balance, and to respect timing is very important.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like the feeling of rushing, anybody rushing, you know, thinking, oh, I'm going to be initiated. There's often at first degree, I'm sure everybody finds it, you know, with their students, oh, they've done first degree and they're so excited and their hands are turned on and what they want is another initiation immediately. When can we do second degree?
Right.
And then they get into practice and the more they practice, the more they seem to realize, well, this is actually it. I don't need to do second degree for quite a while. I want to have the experience of being with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's happening more and more with students.
Yes, it seems like
they're,
it.
They're willing to wait.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And for master initiations, they're willing to wait years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
mm-hmm.
that's wonderful. Because when they reach that point of maturity, they're really there.
Mm-hmm.
They're really ready. Yeah. When I look back now at, you know, the relatively short time between first degree and being initiated as a master, I think it all happened under the law of grace, you know.
But times were different back then. I mean,
yes.
For those who weren't in Reiki in the 1980s, I mean, there was an explosion that was happening. And part of it, interestingly enough, I believe, was because my grandmother died. And somehow this energy that she kept was, like, released somehow. And that the people that she initiated very shortly were compelled out into the world because of her death. I think that I just wonder if she had been initiating masters along, like, for the last, say, 15 years of her life, would, you know, and of course we can't go there, but, you know, would it have been different? But because here we were, you know, thick in the new age of, you know, this whole new age explosion, people going to workshops, people searching for spirituality or a new way to heal their bodies or something.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we're kind of arrogant and, you know, we get this initiation and now all of a sudden we're masters and we can teach. And we end up, you know, one woman goes to Australia, one woman goes to England, one woman goes to Germany, one woman goes to Holland or the Scandinavian countries, one woman goes to France, one man travels all over the United States. I mean, all of these people who really just spread the word.
Yeah.
It was like, there's a wonderful word about disseminating a kind of spiritual knowledge. I don't know.
Diaspora?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know if it can apply here. But it's
yeah.
very interesting
yes.
because it was done totally with word of mouth. You know, people
yes.
just meeting by chance and saying,
yes.
please come to Germany. I'll you know, make a class for you, and then, you know, it explodes
uh-huh.
in Germany.
Uh-huh.
So in this timing, I think that you waited actually quite a long time relatively to some a lot of people
yes.
who got
yeah.
who were initiated as
yeah.
masters. The interesting thing, though, that I find fascinating is that in the first, I'd say, 8 or 9 years that I initiated masters, the first 5 or 6 years where I knew really nothing about what I was doing, most of those masters are still teaching. Because somehow they were connected. And I feel like they were connected through the energy of my grandmother.
Uh-huh.
And then I had to go out on my own and make, well, we won't say mistakes. Well, maybe we should. And then, you know, feeling my way through my own process. And now, after 30 years, I find that there's another whole group of people who are coming in who are very dedicated and don't have a kind of idea that Reiki is like a new age new age job, but it's a vocation. It's something
yes.
that's called out of you, and that no matter what, you are a Reiki master.
Yes. yes.
And that's really an interesting
yeah.
cycle that
yes.
we've gone through. Yeah.
Do you think the other side of the those early masters, the masters from the 80s, was that they formed such a strong bond between themselves. I mean, the community was strong.
Community was very strong.
Yes, with the intensives and so on that,
yeah.
that you organized. And
yeah.
Yes, I was just a little bit later than that generation, but I recognize them, and there's a unique energy about this,
yes.
that group.
But I also feel
yeah.
that group was born in a time when no one knew about Reiki.
Yeah.
The internet didn't exist. You know, we hardly made phone calls because phone calls were so expensive.
Yeah.
I mean, I used to have $3,000 phone bills.
Ooh.
you know, because it was so expensive to call people. But I had to. I had to keep on track and organizing things in Europe and so on. I mean, it was nuts. But those days will not ever be repeated. But it was a very interesting time. It was like an initiatory time for all of us. Really amazing.
Have the image of yeast in the bread, you know, sort of fizzing.
So now, after all the years that you've initiated people in First Degree, do you feel like the initiation energy has changed? As we've talked about the energy of the community, do you think the energy of initiation has changed?
Interesting question. I think people get it more quickly and more easily. I don't know if it's the energy that's changed or whether people have changed. But I find people turning on more quickly than they used to.
Much
more easily. Sometimes in the early days, you know, I would get calls from students saying, well, I'm not feeling anything yet. Well, keep practicing, you know. But now, most of them in the class, you know, after a couple of initiations, they've got it. They know they've got it. I mean, they had it anyway, but they're conscious. And their experience of initiation is more conscious, I would say.
Yes, I would say that too.
And they're more... somehow in the New Age era, there was a lot of expectation of, you know, some amazing experience.
Oh, well, phenomenology, I call it. You know, this wish for phenomena was really high.
Flashing lights and auras and all the rest of it. But people seem to be more in their bodies. And just, it's as though they're accepting it as a much more... everyday kind of thing. Still mysterious, but grounded.
Mystery is a part of life.
Yes, grounded mystery somehow.
Interesting. Well, as a Reiki master, what do you feel like your responsibility is as an initiator? You know, you have these students and you initiate them, and I'll just give a little history. So when my grandmother, well, at the end of her life, which is when I knew her, was the last 2 or 3 years of her life as a Reiki master, she would initiate people, and basically she would just say, well, I'll probably never see you again. Let Reiki teach you. And she would just go off and never looked back. And I was just kind of, as a student of hers, I was a little shocked and horrified. You know, how can you just leave people with this? But she would say, don't worry about it. Reiki will teach them. Reiki will teach them. And then, of course, because I had this little thing about, well, I'm not ever going to do that like my grandmother, I initiated people, and then I tried to keep track of them. And when I couldn't, I used to feel alternating frustration that they weren't available for me to keep track of. And then... a relief that I couldn't keep track of them because I didn't know what I would do with them if I could. And then another part was kind of guilt that I wasn't paying more attention to creating community and so on, because at that point, you know, we were reading about Buddhist communities and rebirthing communities and, you know, all these different kinds of communities that really seem to have wonderful, rich lives together. So... then at some point I just gave it all up because it was obvious that this was something that was like individual. People just went off, and if they stayed in touch with you, that was their business. So as an initiator, I always thought, well, it's important for me to be available somehow. And it was important to me to be, to have a, I don't know, a presence somehow in the world of Reiki. But now, I'm not so sure that that's a responsibility. I think that's more my own idea of what responsibility is. I have a feeling that we have to go back to the ancient Greeks and maybe Egyptians to find out what the real responsibilities on an energetic level are.
That would be interesting.
Yes.
I feel there's always some sort of connection.
Yes.
You know, when I see a student again, even after years, I do feel there is an energetic connection.
Mm-hmm.
I used to keep track of, you know, I had long lists of students and would write newsletters and all that kind of thing. I gave that up years ago. What I do now is to make sure that they have some connection in their own community.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because I've always travelled quite a lot, really, and especially in the early days, my classes were scattered all over the place. But
mm-hmm.
Knowing how isolated I felt to begin with, because mm-hmm. there weren't many people around, I make sure they have a connection with other people.
Mm-hmm.
And they have my email address, my phone number or something, and if they want to contact me, they can. The nice thing now about the internet is that people I thought I was never going to see again, they found me on the internet and contacted me after years saying, hi, do you remember me from, you know, 10, 15 years ago?
Wonderful.
Feeling ready for second degree, or I've done this, done that, and that's lovely.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I always quote your grandmother saying, let Reiki teach you. I love her one-liners.
Me too.
Hands on Reiki on, hands on Reiki, hands on Reiki off, yes.
Yes. So, I don't know if you know the detail of where, say, our ancient, our ancestors came from, who were initiators. But my feeling is that the responsibility part isn't about the outer world, but is about the inner world of us, ourselves as initiators. Like, somehow, do we hold a certain energy for our students so that they feel connected? I always think about this because there are so many masters who have initiated groups of people, and especially those where I've been a little bit shocked that they've decided now not to teach or not to be involved in Reiki. After years of concentrated teaching and being what I would consider to be very dedicated masters, and somehow in their life it just feels like they need to let this go for the time being. And what happens with their students? And do they still hold the energy, you know, somewhere inside of themselves? do they hold a place for their students? Is it a breach somehow that they're not really going deeper as a Reiki student? And are they really going deeper but on the outer world doing something else? I mean, these are all my kind of mm-hmm. questions about responsibility. And I know that it seems like, anyway, on the outside, that in Egypt, for instance, there was this very... there was this understood culture of ritual, initiation, and hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a friend of mine who's very deep into this Egyptian, ancient Egyptian hierarchy, mystery teaching.
Yes.
And maybe this is a great question for her. Nikki, if you're out there, you know, get a hold of me, because I'd be really interested, because there's a whole... I feel like this isn't a part of the mystery, it's a part of the unknown.
Yeah.
And it's a part of the unknown that will become known to us as we as Reiki masters become more knowledgeable about what we're really doing.
Yes.
That is not how the initiation works, but more how we work as an initiator, which feels really different to me.
I feel my responsibility is not to write newsletters and things and to feel I have to do anything, but I like to feel that I keep open on an inner level if people want to connect with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I had an interesting example of that a few years ago. I'd just moved house, I'd just had quite a serious accident, and I wasn't in a state to contact students or let anybody know where I was. But I kept hearing this name in my head, this voice going in my head, with the name of one of my students from several years before, who lived in the same area. And it was becoming quite annoying, like a little refrain. I couldn't get rid of this name, you know. And I'd only met her a couple of times. She did first degree, did second degree, didn't know her well. But I looked her up on my list, and I sent her a postcard, and I said, I've just I've just moved, here I am, you know, how are you doing? And she phoned by return. She said, I've been praying to get hold of you because I had such an amazing experience with Reiki treatments and I didn't know where you were. And that was amazing to me, you know, that somehow we still had that connection and she knew how to get in there and I knew how to respond.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yes. I sometimes dream about people and then they'll phone me. And so there is still a connection.
Definitely.
When I find it finishes, if they do first degree with me and they do second degree with somebody else, or if they've done second degree with me and then they become initiated as a master with somebody else, I feel the connection breaks.
Really?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Huh,
and that's interesting, and it's very clear that I'm no longer their master.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. So I don't know what happens energetically, but something changes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Fascinating. Do you think that there's another realm of... maybe responsibility isn't quite the right word. Another realm of contact besides what we call energetic, you know, what you're describing?
How do you mean?
Well, I don't know. I mean, this is part of the mystery. You know, like, okay, so here's my other thing. I realized that I didn't realize where I was going until now.
Okay.
So, in Reiki, it seems that one of the things that comes to students very quickly is an understanding that time is really an illusion. I mean, like the clock kind of time is really an illusion. And that we do that just so that we can all have agreement about meeting or about, you know, I don't know, somehow being in the relative world.
Yes.
But in the absolute world, time and space is just time and space. I mean, there's no markers.
Yeah.
So if that's true, then as connection, as initiators, are we somehow building networks of connection in this absolute time-space reality?
Uh-huh.
And what does that mean? Like, are we like, what are they? I wish I knew something about astrology now, but, you know, they have these marker stars now that they have found. I don't know, they have, you know, their astrologers are always, not astrologers, astronomers, are always identifying these different kinds of galaxies and star constellations and so on. And there's like a marker star, and then there are stars that wheel around it, you know, and have this network. But the marker stars all seem, this is not the right name for them, but all seem to be connected somehow in a greater pattern.
Uh-huh.
So are we pattern holders? Uh-huh. Are we pattern keepers for some very different kind of energy that the Egyptians already knew about, and the Greeks maybe did in another way.
Okay.
But I'm just, this is where I'm going with
this.
So I just, I don't know, do you think this is like totally out to lunch?
I think it's about thought forms that are created, you know, by many people thinking the same thing over time or even within, you know, within a specific time frame. That something is created by the power of thought. And we talk about a network, a Reiki network, you know, and you imagine this, you know, I imagine the great fishing net.
Yes.
With these little knots, you know, and then
the
net spreading over, I'm sure. And I've often had the experience, I'm sure we all have, of, you know, holding hands in a Reiki circle. It might be quite a small circle, end of a little first degree class, perhaps. And the circle seems to grow bigger and bigger and bigger, as though you can't tell how many hands there are in the circle. And I imagine it just spreading out and spreading out, this connection through the through the shared initiation experience. So I'm sure I could see it.
Well, one of the things that I feel that's very interesting to get back to kind of a practical, probably a practical sense, is that As Reiki masters, I feel we're being called to support those students who are in contact with us by taking them on journeys, and I use the word journeys very loosely, taking them on journeys that deepen their energetic understanding of Reiki. So, you know, people doing like weekend silent retreats or weekend second degree explorations, or, you know, a week-long retreat going to Iona or to Egypt or somewhere where these energetic pieces have already been in place. So I'm just wondering if you have done anything like that, and if you feel that this is part of the energy of responsibility, maybe, or just a function of being an initiator.
Well, I think it's a wonderful function. I don't know if it's a responsibility, but it's something I love to do, just for the experience of being, you know, with other Reiki students, in the energy, deepening our practice. Yes, I've done many things like that, some of them quite experimental in different parts of the world, and they've been extremely fruitful and memorable.
Do you think that there's merit at all in having some kind of an organized Reiki but organized seems like the word organized and Reiki don't really go together so well. So I'm just wondering how you feel about that energy of what we might call organization, and if there's any possibility to be able to somehow connect, but this network that we're talking in a physical kind of practical way, or if we must back up and just be energetic. So I'm thinking about the internet as a totally energetic, amorphous, kind of mysterious kind of way of communicating that feels like it fits our life in Reiki more.
Yes, and I think things are moving more that way. I mean, I know from experience that something happens when organizing changes from a verb into a noun. Organizing, you know, when I was first a master, I wanted just to get together with other people.
Right.
I wanted to find other people, so we organized little meetings, and that somehow mysteriously became an organization, the Reiki Association. And I agree with you that it doesn't, organization and Reiki don't somehow fit. It's always been a struggle. It's been a wonderful experience, an amazing struggle, and a wonderful learning experience, and it has brought a lot of people together sharing experiences, and now we're in a state of change, and I think becoming much more able to have a loose network through the web, using the possibilities there, which are great. But I still question whether there needs to be a sort of hub where all the lines cross.
Right. Well, it's a big question mark for sure.
It could become too dispersed.
Right. And would that be okay?
It would be okay, but I think it would lose something. I have an image of a sort of galaxy with all these stars flying off in different directions, you know. And there is something very nourishing, actually, about having a central hearth. It's like having a home with a with a hearth that you could come and sit by. There's been something very nice about our annual gatherings in the Reiki Association in Britain, that we get together. In the same place over many years, which has been nice. It does have a big fireplace, and there's music and dance and Reiki treatments, and just meetings, and it's a homecoming. It's nourishing to our Reiki year. And a lot of people say, "Oh yes, I've recharged my Reiki batteries. I'll be all right for another year now." So,
Great. Good. Well, we're almost to the close of our interview, and I'm just wanting to come back again to initiation. And I see that we've moved from initiation and kind of gotten very big, and then, you know, gone to kind of the result of initiation, which is community, organization, what we're connected with. One of the things that I'm very astonished about is the strength of the connection of the initiation group. So, for instance, first degree classmates who meet again always have this very special bond with each other.
Yes.
I find that to be also very interesting.
Yeah, many of them get together and celebrate their Reiki birthday.
Yes, I find that just fascinating.
Yes. Yeah.
And so it brings me again to the place of, well, do you have a theory about what we're doing with initiations?
Offering an opportunity to begin again and again.
Uh-huh. So you don't have an idea about what we're doing as initiators?
Oh, theoretically, like opening chakras and all that kind of stuff. I wouldn't have a clue. I don't see any of that. Something opens, for sure. I feel we're just opening a door for people.
Uh-huh.
And they have to step through.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And then the practice for me keeps them in that space and deepens it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful. Yeah. Well,
sowing seeds.
Sowing seeds.
Yes.
And then Reiki just nourishes them.
Yes, absolutely.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Great. Well, Kristen, thank you so much for this time with you. It's been wonderful. I loved exploring the possibility of ancient Greek and ancient Egypt. It makes me want to go read those books again and get a hold of Nikki. So, listeners, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Kristen Bonney. And I just wonder, I looked at the time and I see that we have a couple of more minutes. Do you have any last words of wisdom? She says.
Well, if you ever run a trip to Egypt with Nikki, I'd love to come.
Great.
Fulfill my ambition to be an Egyptian priestess.
Okay. Wonderful. I'll keep that in mind.
And thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome. My pleasure. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.